You're listening to episode 20 of LangFM, the podcast about the wonderful world of languages, interpreting and technology. My guest today is Sergio Lorien.
I'm from New York, where everyone says Lorien, but actually my parents are Cuban, so it's pronounced Llorian. But I mean, I've grown up in Croton-on-Hudson, New York, so the pronunciation became Lorien since the day I was born.
Sergio is the CEO and co-founder of Voiceboxer. Voiceboxer is an online platform for conferences, presentations, and webinars that also allows for interpretation and slides in multiple languages. The special focus is on smaller events that would otherwise happen without interpretation or not at all. Keep listening to learn more about Sergio and Voiceboxer. How did you come to Europe then?
Well, I came to Europe to be with my partner, and you know, I used the opportunity to attend Copenhagen Business School to get my MBA, and that set me on this path with Voiceboxer.
Yeah, I saw that on your LinkedIn profile, actually, because it looks like you have a bit of a legal background, actually.
That's right. I was a lawyer in New York. I went to New York University School of Law. Graduated in 1997. I was a lawyer at a firm for a few years before I got into language services.
Where did the interest in languages came from then? Was that before you came to Europe or afterwards?
Oh, that was before. That was well before. I had worked for Ubicus Reporting when I was in the U.S. for many years before I came to Europe. And the interest, I mean, it's always been a bit of a fascination, isn't it? You know, my first language was Spanish, well, sort of concurrent with learning English. And I learned French in school and started studying German in university. So there's always been, you know, something there that found it interesting. Now, I'm not particularly skilled enough to work in language services myself, but but interested enough to work around language services, which gets me pretty far, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. And do you like it in Europe?
Oh, I love it. I mean, a general question. I think Copenhagen is just a fantastic place to be. It's, you know, I get used to so many things. First of all, a new language to learn, which is always fun, especially at my age. It keeps the brain fresh, I suppose. And then you get accustomed to bicycling around town and the water everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think for, you know, there's for someone like me who's always had a bit of wanderlust, and being from the United States, living in Europe where whatever cities seemed so exotic in the past now are, you know, 2-hour flight away. That's just fantastic.
That's true. So your Danish is coming along nicely then.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, one of the beauties of Denmark is that they offer free language education for several years, you know, for people who are living here, for foreigners who are living here, and that's fantastic. But Danish is a particularly tough language, and
it is, yeah.
Yes, but I mean, it's
very tricky. I think
it is pretty tricky, and but I mean, I know enough to get by, so that I can feel like I'm really integrating, and I'm certainly doing my best to assimilate.
Awesome, I've been to Copenhagen for the very first time last August, I think, and I was so amazed by the city. Just, you know, the way it looks, and then the bicycles everywhere. That was really, really impressive. That was awesome. And they have these special racks next to traffic lights and that kind of thing. And you have to be very careful not to get run over by a bicycle, which is a completely new experience, because in Brussels, usually you have to pay attention to the cars, but in Copenhagen, it's the bicycles.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And bicycles have the right of way. It's really kind of a funny scene. You know, my parents came to visit me once, and I think they got confused between what's a bike lane and what's the sidewalk. And my father almost got run down. And his comment is, you know, that's a mistake you only make once. You know, from that point on, he absolutely knew the difference between the sidewalk and the bike lane.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. And is Copenhagen a very techie city? Are there a lot of startups and small companies in the tech scene?
Well, I think so. I think it's proportionate to its size, it certainly is. And I think it's also growing. I think the sort of ecosystem for startups and innovation is really gaining an aggressive foothold here. I think it's actually a very, it's still pretty young, that mentality, but I think it's growing very, very quickly. So it's actually, I would say, I don't have that much of a frame of for comparison, but I would say it is a thrilling place to be working in the startup circles.
Excellent. And is that where you found the rest of the Voiceboxer team, sort of from the local tech scene, or how did you guys get together?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. My business partner, Andrea, he is from Italy, and I met him through the MBA. And then it was actually through the MBA that I met sort of Dan Ventures, a co-founder, and they were able to get me on the path with the tech development and introduce me to Kasper Kronborg, our current CTO. So, you know, it's from there it sort of builds, but we're very local to Copenhagen. However, we're very international in our composition as a team.
So you said you didn't really want to go into language profession per se, but you wanted to work around languages. I'm curious, what prompted the idea of Voiceboxer before we go into the detail of what it is and how it works and so on? Were you scratching an itch or something, or where did the idea come from?
You know, that's a really interesting question. First of all, I'll say it's not that I didn't want to go into language services. I would say more that you know, I have a deep admiration for those of you who are skilled enough to be able to pull off interpretation, translation. So it's not for lack of desire, but more lack of talent that keeps me outside of doing it myself. I mean, I can barely speak English these days, it feels sometimes. but as for the inspiration, you know, there was a bit of something that I had spotted. I think when I had worked in New York, I had noticed that, you know, the bigger the size of the interpretation job, the more likely, you know, if we put out a quote, the bigger it was, the more likely it would be to go through. And it's something that, you know, at first blush did not seem super intuitive. You know, you'd have quotes out there for $30,000 or upwards of that, and then you'd have quotes out there for $3,000 or $5,000, and those quotes would invariably be declined. And when you dig a little bit further, you know, the conversations with the customers and the salespeople, it showed a really interesting logic behind it, which is, you know, if you have an event that requires, let's say, you know, tens of thousands of dollars worth of interpretation services and equipment and technical support, then this is an event that is so huge that the budget for language services is a drop in the bucket.
It is.
Conversely, when you have a 1.5 hour event for a handful of people, and you still have all of these costs that you can't get rid of, you know, for the interpreters working in pairs and the equipment and the technical assistance and all of that, then suddenly for an event that small, a quote of just a couple thousand dollars becomes prohibitive. So it really drew my attention to the fact that these smaller events were underserved. You know, these very necessary and very valuable language services became cost prohibitive because of everything that goes with it. And so it's not, you know, these events would end up not seeing the light. So that's sort of what inspired Voiceboxer, thinking, you know, there must be a way to serve smaller events, lower budget events, and of course, by extension, virtual events in a way that makes, that creates a platform that allows interpreters to feel supported, professional, and I guess make it very intuitive while also being able to provide customers with these language services that they need for these smaller underserved events.
And I think that's what you refer to as the, during one of our earlier conversations, as the iceberg, right? Because the tip just being the big conferences that get served anyway, and you're trying to focus on what's underwater, the huge volume of those small or ad hoc events or conferences or whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, from my experience, that's exactly what was going on, was that, you know, these events that got these valuable language services were the ones that basically had the budget to allow it. There were so many where they would request a quote and then say, well, we're just going to have to live without. And so, you know, and that's the, what's everything that's below the waterline of that iceberg metaphor is, you know, all of these events that so badly need language services. However, these customers feel that it's cost prohibitive, so they just muddle along, hoping that business English will be sufficient, and for attendees, they can do nothing but grin and bear it.
Right. And I mean, we should probably just say what VoiceBoxer is. It's an online platform, which is mainly focused on multilingual webinars. So it's not a catch-all solution for remote interpreting. It's really focused on this kind of webinar use case, right?
Yeah, for webinars and web conferences, since you can have multiple presenters. But yeah, that's the idea, is to allow for simultaneous interpretation being done for these virtual events.
And I think on your website, you have quite a long list and a varied list of use cases. So it's not just for the traditional webinars that are actually quite popular among translators and interpreters for continuous professional development, but there could be other use cases as well, like a phone conference or things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the use cases that we're seeing are pretty disparate. There's a lot of course, education and training. But you know, we've also discussed debates that allow people to sort of connect, even small meetings where people can listen in on their own language and then speak in their own language, since you can pass the microphone back and forth to other participants wherever they're located. Then suddenly you can have a moderated conversation. So at that point, you know, the use cases become pretty much anytime people would want to meet and speak and get past a language barrier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you've succeeded in creating a very intuitive and uncluttered platform, I think. I mean, we've done a demo before and I saw how it works. And you have, let's say, different interfaces for different roles. But I mean, the general structure is that you have a video feed of the person speaking, then obviously the audio. And what's important is you can have slides, which is, I think, very important, not only for webinars, but also for presentations or like business use cases. And the multilingual aspect starts already with the slides, because I think the slides can also be translated. And is that something that the interpreter could also do, for example, if you want to serve your client, let's say?
Yeah, that's exactly right. When you select your audio channel, since slides can be translated, you would see those translated slides in the language you select. Therefore, you get a fully multilingual experience, and this also benefits the interpreters. Now, of course, interpreters like to will do a lot of research. So, you know, they're trained professionals, and we provide the materials as early as we can, as you know, as is always the case. But what we do when the translated slides are available, we make sure that the slides are shown to the interpreters in the language into which they're interpreting. That mm-hmm. gives an additional support to allow, you know, so that word choice becomes cohesive, you know, that the message basically stays completely aligned with what the speaker intends and what the interpreter is able to do.
Excellent. And then in terms of roles, so I see here on the website that you have, there's usually a moderator, as would be the case in a traditional webinar. Then there's the presenter, the person that would, let's say, give a presentation. Then you have the interface for audience members. And then you also have a dedicated interface for interpreters, I think. And it's difficult in this audio environment, but could you just sort of describe the basic features of the console.
Sure. It sounds actually a little more complicated than it is. You know, well, what you want to look at for participants, whether you plan on speaking or not, you have the ones that are speaking, the presenters who can have control over the presentation, and the audience, just a participant that doesn't have an active role. And then the moderator is just sort of a super presenter. They decide, they pass the microphone and control over the slides and the presentation to the various speakers. And the speakers can also raise their hands and queue up to make that easier. So the features, therefore, are, you know, you get the video stream coming from the active speaker. Mm-hmm. And this is useful because, of course, for the participants, it creates a very personal approach to this, virtual meeting and this collaboration. For interpreters, you also get these visual cues because you get a fantastic image of the speaker. You can you can pick up the subtleties of meaning, of tone. It was that last statement meant to be humorous or sarcastic, or you know, all of these things that aid in the comprehension is suddenly that's passed along as an asset to the interpreters. And then, of course, the audio is available. You know, when you select your language, you will either listen to the interpreted audio, or if the language that you select is the same as what the speaker is speaking, you will listen directly to the speaker. And of course, in the center is the presentation, as you mentioned, these slides that could be translated. Now, some of the other features that we have a chat available so that audience members who do not have an active microphone can still interact with the materials. And also interpreters, this is something that's very valuable. We call it our virtual booth. Interpreters can work in this interface in pairs, you know, as interpreters do, and they can pass the microphone back and forth. And inside their virtual booth, there is also a private chat. That way they can support each other with notes and other communications, so they can work remotely together as close as possible in such a remote situation as if they were side by side.
Yeah, and I think that's a very interesting approach, that virtual booth. But just before we dig deeper into the interpreting side of things, just maybe a look under the hood. You don't have to install any plugins or anything for VoiceBoxer to work, because if you have a modern browser, I think it just works out of the box using the WebRTC technology, which is sort of a very, I don't know, not necessarily a very new technology, but a technology that is sort of slowly gaining ground in the browser scene, let's say.
Yeah, that's correct. It's a completely browser-based solution, and it is WebRTC-based, which, you know, it's... we see it, as you say, it's not necessarily new, but it is something that a lot of people are looking to as the future of streaming technologies.
Yeah, and I must say I've used several applications that use WebRTC, and it seems very stable and very robust, because obviously when working remotely, there's always a bit of anxiety or nervousness as to, will it work? Are there any technical problems? But I think that the fact that you don't have to install a plugin or any dedicated software, that makes that already much easier, I think. So maybe let's go into a little bit more detail for the interpreting side of things. So you mentioned the virtual booth and that it has a chat box, and there are a few other interesting features, I think, for the interpreters. So you can adjust the volume. For example, you can chat with your colleague, and you also have a very interesting procedure for handing over the mic when one interpreter's turn is over and the other interpreter is about to take over. Can you just quickly describe how it works?
Sure. Well, first, before I describe how the mic is handed over, the volume controls, I think, are also an interesting one. You know, we engage with a lot of interpreters to find out what they want. You know, basically, we view it as we have two stakeholders here. We want to make sure that we appeal to customers, of course, but we want to make sure that we appeal to interpreters. And the volume controls were designed to work independently. So you have two controls there. You have the volume of the speaker and the volume of your partner. Now, some interpreters like to listen to the speaker to make sure they get the flow of the message and become even more expert on the topic. Some prefer to listen to their partner to make sure that they They match word choices and style so that there's a seamless experience for the audience. And some like to listen to both at the same time. These volume controls are completely independent. So each interpreter can set them to the levels and to the relative levels that are most comfortable for them.
Yeah.
Now in the virtual booth, as you mentioned, we have a three-step process, and it's actually much easier than it might sound, but I'll do my best to describe it here. What we have is the active interpreter will click a button that will request a switch of the microphone. This is basically like asking, "Are you ready?" Mm-hmm. Then the inactive interpreter will see the request, and when they are ready, will accept the switch request. That basically is them saying, "Yes, I'm ready." At that point, you have the inactive interpreter poised and ready to start when the microphone is switched, and the mm-hmm. active interpreter knowing that they are ready to go. So then the active interpreter then can activate the switch at an appropriate moment, at the end of a sentence, at the end of a slide, at any moment that creates creates a seamless switch. And that, you know, and then there's a notification saying to tell the second interpreter that they are now the active interpreter, and everything is reset for a new switch at the appropriate time. So it's a three-step process, but it's basically the active interpreter saying, "Are you ready?" The second interpreter saying, "Yes," and then the first interpreter saying, "Here you go."
I think it's actually a very good implementation. I mean, given the fact that the interpreters are usually not in the same room, so I think it's quite straightforward. You also have two other interesting features. You have a feature that many interpreters like and that exists in traditional booth and consoles, but it usually doesn't work very well. But I could see it working very well in this online context, which is the slow down button, which many consoles have, but usually it's either not connected or it's not set up properly, or the speaker just doesn't see it or doesn't care. But I think in this, in a way, more intimate working relationship, I could see it work much better. So you can have that request to slow down. And I think for the speaker or for the presenter, it's a subtle hint, but still a visible hint at the top of the screen, I believe.
Well, it's actually at the bottom of the screen, at the bottom of the slide. And it's really interesting what you bring up, because that slowdown reminder created both an opportunity, because as you mentioned, you know, in this virtual space, suddenly you have the speaker's attention, which means the slow down reminder is going to be visible, but also a bit of a design challenge. You know, you have to find that balance that makes it, on the one hand, noticeable, so it has the desired effect. On the other hand, not so distracting that it derails the concentration of the speaker.
Right.
So, you know, you have to find that, you know, it has to be subtle, but not so subtle that it goes unnoticed. And it was actually, you know, practically speaking, it was a no-brainer, but design-wise, that actually took a lot of collaboration and a lot of experimentation before we found a balance that seems to work for everybody.
Yeah, I can imagine it's quite a challenge. And to round off the interpreting features, there's a mute button, which is quite important, or a cuff button, if you will. And I think you also have, usually you have a technician on hand, because what we have in a normal conference situation usually would be that there's a conference technician that can help if there's any technical problems. And in this case, with VoiceBoxer, you have a person available online, and they monitor the event, I suppose, or they just get a message or a pop-up when there's an issue?
We call it our live support. There for all of our live events, there is always someone on to troubleshoot if anything goes on. It is something that is useful because, you know, to have an expert there that has seen what may go wrong, and therefore can troubleshoot. You know, it's just a button click away to say, "Okay, I see what you're experiencing, and this is what you should do." It gives a lot of assurance for interpreters. You know, you do have that live presence with you. In addition, we do have a monitoring system that tracks everything that's going on. So in some cases, we're able to spot things before any of the, you know, before you would. you know, where you could have an experience where suddenly an interpreter's volume has gone dead, and we reach out to them through this same live support and say, you're not transmitting right now. You're not broadcasting. What's going on? And in one such case, the interpreter had just accidentally knocked their headset loose. So it was a 2-second fix of, oh, sorry, here you go. Now it's back on. And you know, the vast majority of situations are those where we will just notice something and we can troubleshoot a small issue before it becomes a big one.
Yeah. And you even offer the possibility of relay interpretation. Can you say something on how that would work?
Well, that's exactly right. There's two things that go along with this. First of all, we can set up the boots to be monodirectional or bidirectional. So, mm-hmm. if, for example, you and I wanted to speak, and we each wanted to speak in our own language, when I would speak, the booth would go in one direction, and when you would speak, it would go in the other. We would speak in two different languages there. So that's the first thing, and the second thing is also that. The system is set up to intelligently find the shortest route from the speaker's language to the listener's desired output language. And sometimes that revolves around a relay through a pivot language. So yeah, it's set up to automatically accomplish that if there is no direct route from the speaker through one of the virtual booths to the listener.
So I would just choose, instead of the floor or the presenter, I could choose another interpreter as my source?
Well, it would actually do that for you. It would actually find the language that, you know, if you are set up, for example, in the English to German booth and it's a French speaker, you would automatically tune in to the English, the French to English booth to be able to provide your output. Now, for interpreters with multiple languages, you can also that's how it defaults, but you can right now in development is the ability to override that default, so you can select the floor.
All right, I see. Okay, I saw on the interpreter section on your website as well that you offer the possibility for interpreters to register or to sign up, What's the advantage of being in that pool, or the advantage of being registered with VoiceBoxer?
Well, I think one of the best things is to be kept up to date with what we're doing. You know, that sort of relationship, I think, is actually mutually beneficial. You know, of course, we're always looking for interpreters that are comfortable with the technology and that are interested in being familiar with it, you know, working on VoiceBoxer. But more so than that, you know, a lot of interpreters directly get requests, and some of them can be really challenging. The more that we keep interpreters abreast of what we can do, the more likely they are to say to their customers, hey, I have a solution that might work for your technical needs in addition to the language services that you need.
Mm-hmm. But do you see it as more driven by the interpreter, or do you see yourself going into the direction of almost being like an agency that where companies come to you and say, well, we have a list of interpreters that may work or that may have the right language combination for what you need?
You know, that's a tougher question. I think it could go multiple ways, but I think for I'll answer this a little more philosophically. What we would love to do is to empower interpreters to be able to use a this virtual platform as a complement to their suite of services. Therefore we would like to be experts at making the technology better and engaging with interpreters to make sure that we are the platform of choice, not only for customers who need this service, but for interpreters who also need to be a little bit in love with what we're doing and how we're doing it for it to be viable.
Yeah. So you would theoretically encourage interpreters to sign up and just to stay up to date with what VoiceBoxer is doing and where you're heading.
Yeah, we would love interpreters to sign up, and interpreters could also shoot us an email. If any interpreter would like to would like to see a demo, you know, we set those up as well. I mean, we're always, as I mentioned earlier, we see interpreters are as a really essential stakeholder for us. So any feedback that we get from interpreters, you definitely have our ear. So we're always eager for feedback along those lines.
Yeah, that's something I can absolutely confirm. Yeah, I don't know if you're comfortable sharing this. I suppose some people will wonder about cost. I mean, is there what the cost involved is for either the interpreter and or the company using this or a presenter using this for giving a webinar? Is that sort of tailored, or do you have a pricing structure? How does it work?
Well, it is tailored, but I will say that we do. It's tailored depending on the needs, because obviously different uses can be. I mean, they can vary so much. But what I will say is that we can do it. We typically do it one of two ways. Of course, there's a full price pay as you go situation where it's like renting equipment. But what we can do also that is very novel as against more traditional on-site interpretation is subscription services that vastly reduce costs. So if there is going to be an anticipated large level of use, subscriptions become much more economical. And in fact, even at the level of, as I think we just did the calculation recently, even at a level as low as 3 hours in a month, it makes more sense to have a subscription.
Okay, so I guess that the best way to find out about that would be to just contact you and specify what the need is in terms of audience and technology and so on.
It really is, and the reason for that is that right. That it's important to have that sort of collaborative discussion to understand exactly what the needs are, so that we can give the best possible pricing under that situation. You know, we have right. We have customers that have been customers, for example, that have been doing a pay-as-you-go situation. And then at one moment I said, you know, with the levels that you're using this, you're going to save a lot more money if we look at some of these subscription options. So it really just, the smartest way to go is to have a conversation to talk about it, and we'll see what we can do.
If I want to get started using VoiceBox as an interpreter, is there anything in terms of equipment that I need? I suppose I just need a computer and what else?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that one. It really doesn't require much of anything. But there are a few things that we say are vitally important. And we say this to interpreters that work with us, and also to our customers. And I mean, you'll understand why as I go through. The most important thing is to have a stable internet connection. Just like other virtual conferencing providers, using an Ethernet cable to connect will give you the most stable signal, and that's very essential for both the speakers for presenters and for interpreters to make sure that you have a smooth experience. In addition to that, having the right headset is essential, not only for receiving the sound but for transmitting smooth audio. This is something that we. You know, on behalf of our interpreters, we say to customers, and we make sure that they're connected with a headset to try to get the best possible sound for the purposes of interpretation. Now, this is a big deal because we want everyone to have the best experience possible, and so sure. You know, when we do trainings, we check not only that the system is functional, that the settings are okay on the computer, but also that the hardware is the right hardware to be able to give a professional high level experience on this virtual setting. So, but other than that, you know, it's browser based, and it's so you work on your laptop or your desktop computer, connect with an Ethernet, and make sure you have a good reliable headset, and you're good to go.
Excellent. So to finish things off, where do you see VoiceBox going? Do you have any plans now in the upcoming months and years, maybe?
Yeah, so many that it would take a long time to finish things off here. What I will say is what I find interesting about a lot of the conversations that we've had recently is that a lot of our customers are looking for a platform that's comparable in capability to what they expect from monolingual providers. In that mm-hmm. sense, we have a very interesting technological challenge, which is provide these features that they expect, however, make sure that it's done in a multilingual way. You know, and mm-hmm. this involves a lot of things from the basics of localizing the interfaces to make sure that they're accessible to things such as multilingual live polling and other things that are a multilingual twist to what is not so uncommon in virtual conferencing circles. And so for us, what we're seeing is that suddenly our offering will continue to become more mature so that we become a platform that you can subscribe for when you have multilingual use, many languages. We have a theoretically unlimited number of language channels that you could have simultaneous, and also when you have a smaller conference or a very localized one and only needed for monolingual use, well then here you have a platform that will accomplish that as well. So that's really the direction that we've started going in, and it seems to be very much informing how we best serve both our customers and our interpreters.
Sounds great. But thank you so much, Sergio, for being once again available and sharing so much about VoiceBoxer and about your work. That was really interesting. And I hope that other people find... I'm actually quite sure other people will find it interesting too. I think it's really a great project that you have going there.
Thank you so much, Alex. It's been a real pleasure. I'm really grateful that you took the time also to speak to me, to attend that demo when we last spoke. I'll just take this moment to encourage anyone else who's interested in learning more, reach out to us. We're here to listen. We're here to talk, and we look forward to seeing what we can do together.